Last month, after years of foot dragging, New Jersey rather abruptly became the latest state to permit marriage equality. Yay! With bipartisan support in the legislature, the issue had been held up by a veto threat from Governor Chris Christie until a federal judge handed him a way out, meaning a way for the potential Republican presidential contender to still be against marriage equality, as today's misguided conservative litmus test requires, while satisfying his state's strong support for ending discrimination. In looking at this change and the grand sweep of progress on LGBT rights in general, I have no problem impugning the motives of political and faith leaders who play on the fears and prejudices of their followers to perpetuate bias and discrimination in the name of morality or religion. But because that technique continues to work among a significant percentage of our population, it's particularly important for reassuring voices of inclusion and acceptance to counter it. Just as Governor Christie was announcing that he would not challenge the pro-marriage court ruling, my first guest was tying the knot with her longtime partner, with the mayor of Jersey City officiating. As a cantor at a leading New Jersey synagogue and a gay woman, Meredith Greenberg is one of the growing number of non-revolutionaries who help create the space for people of faith to defy the divisive messages we hear every single day. And I'm very pleased to welcome the newlywed to the show. Meredith, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
First of all, congratulations to you and Leora.
Thank you.
After almost 20 years together, what was it like to stand there and say the vows together?
We were sort of laughing before the ceremony began because we have been making promises and vows to each other for a lot of years and keeping them, actually, and teaching our three children about the strength behind one's words and saying things that you mean and having people witness you and hearing you say them and affirming you.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if it was going to feel like, you know, a real moment and a really different significant change. But I have to say, I was humbled by how emotional and how significant it really was for us. We've been together for, as you mentioned, a really long time. And when we first got together, in truth, I didn't allow myself to even believe that something like marriage and perhaps even a family was an option for me. It wasn't an available option. Certainly when I looked around, marriage was not sanctioned by our government. And yet, as I'm blessed to say, love emboldens you. It, it makes you courageous. It fills you with thoughts of inspiration and sustains you to go out into the rest of the world and stand up for what you believe and ask for what you know in your heart you deserve.
I love what you're saying and the joy with which you're saying it and identify with it. But there is a side of me. I was out in Iowa about 3 or 4 weeks ago to do a wedding ceremony for two dear friends who've been together almost 30 years. And I have to say, and maybe it's just a flaw in my character, but I was a little hacked off that we had to wait that long and that we had to go through what we've gone through for people who are more married than most people in the United States are married to be recognized for it.
Right. You know, on Sunday, we got this phone call from the really terrific organization, New Jersey United for Marriage, because I had been doing advocacy work with them and with other organizations for, you know, the last many years here in New Jersey. And I was asked, you know, if we would be one of the couples that got married. And as I often do every week at the very end of our Sabbath of Shabbat, I open up my Tanakh, my Hebrew Bible. I look at what the Torah portion is for the coming week. So I start to study. And I was so excited and delighted because actually the first marriage in our text happened last week in the Torah. And it's such a funny thing where in ancient days, there was no government sanctioning for marriage. You know, a couple looked in one another's eyes and understood that God brought them together. and they went into a tent and they were married.
Yeah.
And the truth is that I have many, many, many friends and relatives who have been in long time, very authentic, rich, meaningful, significant relationships. And it's silly to now all of a sudden call ourselves married when, of course, we have been married for a long time.
Sure.
But language is so powerful.
It is.
And because our state affirms us, our friends and neighbors know what to call us.
Mm-hmm.
And know how to use language to affirm us. And that's a powerful thing for everyone. We all won because we can have this change in the way that we speak about these relationships. So I wish it had taken less time. But in my time with my now wife, we've gone from not even praying for marriage to happen to now seeing it happen
right.
in not as much, as many states as we'd like, but it's the beginning.
Yeah. How do your personal experiences inform your experiences in ministry?
I have to tell you that I don't know if I could be doing the really demanding, extremely challenging work that I think is God's work
mm-hmm.
Daily, every day, out in my community with my congregation, but in with the larger community as well, unless I had the sustaining, inspiring life that I have at home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I wasn't really outspoken about marriage equality until after my wife and I stood under the chuppah and had a very traditional, very beautiful Jewish wedding 12 years ago.
Mm.
It was from that experience that I understood how important it is to allow couples to ritualize and to raise their voices up and to allow their community to affirm them in the way that our tradition teaches us.
Right,
and
right.
It's given me so much energy to encourage and to nurture other couples and just other human beings,
sure.
every soul, to find that goodness within them. It affects every part of the way that I work and
sure.
that I serve my community.
A few weeks ago, the dean of the National Cathedral here in D.C. got quite a bit of attention for challenging homophobia as a sin. Does that resonate for you in your tradition?
In my pulpit and in my community, I've had the privilege of counseling and working with a lot of people who come because I am an openly gay woman and clergy, and they struggle because they so badly want to walk in their world and in the light of God, and they want to feel that their tradition affirms them. And I sit with them and I say, you know, we have inherited a tradition to be a people literally that struggle with God. I mean, we mm-hmm. are, as in my faith tradition, as a Jewish woman, our name is Yisrael, which means to struggle with God. And we have to continue to ask our tradition to evolve along the lines with us. I can't stand by and let one more young person extinguish their own life because they would frankly rather be dead than have to go against what they think their tradition is telling them right. is wrong about them.
Yeah.
And so I've made it really a very important part of my life, of my work, to lift a voice of affirmation and celebration of all kinds of people and of all kinds of couples. And I hope to just keep doing that.
As the nation continues to evolve on LGBT issues, what role do you see for people in public ministry? Is just the very notion of openness helpful, or is there a mandate for doing something more?
It would be very easy, since I live here in New Jersey, to, you know, celebrate our victory and just move on, you know, next cause. But I have to tell you that I'm pained that so few states in this incredible country where there is such freedom of choice here, that so few of our states are moving forward to integrate stronger legislation
mm-hmm.
for same-sex couples and for just LGBT people in general. So I think we have a really strong mandate. Look, there is a core teaching in my tradition to do litaken olam or tikkun olam, this idea that we have to do repair in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our mission as human beings, doing the right thing and living God's word. But what it tells us on the flip side of that is we can't begin to do that work out in the world until we can do it at home.
Mm-hmm.
We have to allow people to have that wholeness in their relationships at home with their significant other and with their children, with their families, with their parents. We have to allow that the home and the love that is between two people and between families to be nurtured and celebrated and affirmed. And I think we do that when we speak from the pulpit about inclusivity and diversity, and when we tell the truth about how our tradition teaches us that it's about love. I think it's a day at a time, and, you know, I'm ready to drive down to Pennsylvania and try to start doing the same work there that I was doing here in New Jersey, and wherever else. It has to be by car, though. I can't leave my three little kids home with my wife all by themselves. I got to be able to get home at night. So, yeah, I think we need to do work. I want to celebrate, but I'm humbled, and we need to move forward.
Meredith Greenberg is the cantor at Temple Ner Tamid in Bloomfield, New Jersey. I think as she finished, I saw a whole bunch of you putting on your coats and running out the door to do something. I mean, she has moved us to do something. As civil marriage equality was finally arriving in her state, she wed her longtime partner, Leora Perlman, on the Jersey City waterfront. Meredith, really, I thank you for sharing this time with us today here on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend, so much. Have a wonderful day.